I wish you a very happy Friday, and I also want you to have a great weekend that includes getting with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation. If you don't have a home congregation, you need to find one, because all of us need a place where we can worship and fellowship and study and learn and serve with other believers. We need to encourage one another to love and good deeds in that church environment. So if you don't have a place, get one. If you're looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, come on, check us out. Maybe we can convince you to settle down and work with us. Fridays, I also like to say thank you to those of you who are making sure that Into the Word stays on this radio program or this radio station. God bless you for that. If any of you want to help out in that area, just hear the contact information at the end of the program today and use that. Let's go ahead and open to where we dropped off last session in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter number 15, and we are ready for verse number 19. Now remember, the book of Deuteronomy is the final address of the prophet Moses in the 11th month of the 40th year of the Exodus. He's only a matter of weeks away from his own death, and Israel is only a matter of weeks beyond that from going into the Promised Land. So this is all about a teacher trying to cram all of the review material into his students before he has to let them leave his classroom and go out into the world. And we have a lot of repeated material, and you'll see that as we go through. One last reminder to those of you that have little children. I know some of you like to be able to study the Bible with them, but a lot of this is really kind of sensitive material that might be over the youngest one's heads. So unless you're ready to do some extra training along that line, you might want to keep them busy until we get through some more of this. Deuteronomy 15:19. Moses says, "All the firstborn males that are born of your herd and flock, you shall dedicate to He who is your God. You shall do no work with the firstborn of your herd, nor shear the firstborn of your flock." So those animals, the firstborn animals, because of the events of Passover, when they left Egypt and God passed over the blood-marked buildings and spared the firstborn, all those firstborn animals belong automatically to God, and they are to basically be given to the Levites and used in worship ceremonies, if they're sacrificial grade, or in the service of the Levites. Maybe the Levites would use some of the non-sacrificial animals to work their own properties. Verse number 20, "You shall eat it, you and your household, before He who is your God, year by year, at the place that He who is will choose." Now, this can be confusing if you don't match it up with something we've already talked about just not too long ago. And that is the tithe, which at the very beginning was mostly animals and produce. The tithe was taken to the place of worship every seventh month after the harvest was finished and everything. And it was eaten, at least the very first portion of it, as part of the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles that went on for 8 days. And you were supposed to share your tithe with the Levites and the priests that were there at the worship site. Now, of course, you're not going to eat, unless you're extremely poor, one-tenth of a year's increase. And so the balance of the tithe, the largest portion of the tithe, went into the storehouses. Most of the time it was there at the centralized worship site. but in the third and the sixth year of the work cycle, it was kept locally. But here is a reference to those firstborn animals being part of this celebration that goes on during the Feast of Tabernacles. So you can eat it, or at least some of them. However, the limits of what they should look like still apply. Verse 21, but if it has any blemish, meaning if there's anything physically wrong with it, if it's lame or blind or has any serious blemish whatsoever, you shall not sacrifice it to He who is your God. So that's not allowed to be a sacrificial animal. It's not sacrificial grade because it's not perfect in its body. You shall eat it within your towns. So it can be eaten in a non-worship setting. The clean and the unclean alike may eat it as though it were a gazelle or a deer. And so just like the wild animals that you butcher out, these non-sacrifice grade animals can be eaten. But there's still the requirement about the blood. Verse 23, only you shall not eat its blood, you shall pour it out on the ground like water. Because life, remember, is in the blood. It symbolizes life, and therefore blood should only be used in the sacrificial ceremony. Otherwise, it is put onto God's green earth. Verse 1 of chapter 16. We'll go back to the calendar now. We've reviewed the calendar several times, but remember, Moses is cramming his students for when they're out of his classroom and in the Promised Land, and he doesn't want them to forget the importance of following calendar procedures. Observe the month of Abib, which is the first month of the Jewish year that starts in spring. In the New Testament era, this same month was often referred to as Nisan. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to He who is your God, for in the month of Abib, your Lord, or He who is your God, brought you out of Egypt by night. So the Passover happens on the 14th. You shall offer the Passover sacrifice to He who is your God from the flock or the herd, so it can be a sheep or a goat, at the place that He who is will choose to make His name dwell there. So they are all supposed to gather to the centralized worship site for Passover every year. So tabernacle during the time previous to King Solomon, the temple at Jerusalem from King Solomon's time onward. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat it with unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that all the days of your life you may remember the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. So leaven is where the bread is allowed to rise naturally, and then you bake it. But they were in a hurry during the first 7 days of their travel after they left Egypt. So when they did bake their bread, they baked it as soon as they got done mixing it together. So it never had the time to rise. And so every year on the anniversary of the departure from Egypt, from the 15th to the 21st of the first month, they ate only unleavened bread at their meals. No leaven shall be seen with you in your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh that you sacrifice on the evening of the first day remain all night until morning. No leftovers of the Passover meal. You eat what you eat at the meal, and then you burn the rest. You shall not offer the Passover sacrifice within any of your towns that He who is your God is giving you, but at the place that he who is your God will choose to make his name dwell in it, there you shall offer the Passover sacrifice in the evening at sunset at the time you came out of Egypt. Now, this is an interesting requirement that I have to do some more research on this, because it seems as if it is inappropriate for the Passover meal of a lamb and the unleavened bread and things of that nature to be eaten anywhere other than at the place of worship that God had designated, not the Temple Mount itself, but at Jerusalem, and that the sacrificial lamb, that is the Passover lamb, needs to be presented at the place of worship, the centralized place of worship, to have its throat cut, and its blood needs to be taken and put next to the altar. Otherwise, it's not an appropriate Passover lamb. Here, that seems to be the very clear meaning. And yet we know that Jewish people throughout history have celebrated the Passover in other places around the world. Verse number 7, you shall cook it and eat it at the place that he who is your God will choose, and then in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. Another reminder that once the Passover meal is finished, it's finished. You don't keep any leftovers and you move on. Now, the unleavened bread, though, continues until the 21st. For 6 days, or should we say 6 more days, you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the 7th day there shall be a solemn assembly to he who is your God. You shall do no work on it. And I'm going to rephrase myself here. The 6 days starts on the 15th, and then the 21st is this 7th day. The way he phrases it here is because of the first day of unleavened bread, the 15th, is a day off of work always. And the 21st day of unleavened bread is always a day off from work. Doesn't matter whether it falls in conjunction with a Sabbath or not. 15th and 21st, always a day off from work. Now, the next mandatory observance on the Jewish calendar is Pentecost. Verse number 9, you shall count 7 weeks. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time the sickle is first put in the standing grain. Now, that's a reference to the ceremony of first fruits. And just to sum it up real quick, the Sabbath that falls between the 15th and the 21st of the first month, that's the Feast of Tabernacles, the Sabbath that falls on one of those 7 days becomes day zero on a 50-day count to Pentecost. Pentecost literally means 50 count. The first day of the week that follows that Sabbath that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that becomes day one of the 50-day count. And that is the day, nobody's supposed to be working on that particular day, remember, the priest, the high priest, is supposed to go out into the barley field, because barley is the grain that is ripe at this time of year, and cut a single sheaf of barley stalks, take it to the tabernacle or later to the temple, wave that in front of God's presence, and by doing this, dedicate the entire harvest of barley to God. And so that's what the reference here is to, that ceremony of cutting that first celebratory sheaf of grain. And so then it's 49 days plus one more. So that brings us back to the first day of another week, 50 days later. And what are you supposed to do? Verse 10, this is what the Israelis were supposed to do. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to He who is your God with the tribute of the freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as He who is your God blesses you. And so it becomes the marker for the next grain harvest, because this is what we know. Pentecost always falls on a Sunday, the first day of the Jewish week. It is a day off of work. The following day is the first possible day that wheat can be harvested. So it's the beginning of the wheat harvest. So the distinction between the barley and wheat harvests is the distinction between first fruits and Pentecost. You shall rejoice before He who is your God, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, the Levite who is within your towns, the sojourner, the fatherless, the widow who is among you, at the place that He who is your God will choose to make His name dwell there. You shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. So Pentecost is another big happy holiday. It's only one day long, unless you realize that there's always going to be a Sabbath in connection to it, and that means you got 2 days off in a row, and then you got to travel there in order to be there on time before the Sabbath begins. So it is kind of a long holiday weekend. And everybody's supposed to party, everybody's supposed to be happy, and share meals together. That is a little bit shorter than the Feast of Unleavened Bread in the early spring. Pentecost always falls in the late spring. But it is still part of the grain harvest celebration. And then that brings us to the third and final mandatory feast, where Israelis were required to go to the place where God's worship site was located, wherever the tabernacle was in the early part of the Old Testament, or wherever the temple was designated eventually, which we know was at Jerusalem. Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Booths, Sukkot is the Hebrew name for it, which is the plural form of sukkah, which is just a reference to a three-sided rigid structure that you put like palm fronds and things over the top of as a temporary celebration residence. You shall keep the Feast of Sukkot, Tabernacles, for 7 days when you've gathered in the produce from your threshing floor and from your wine press. So the grain harvest starts right at Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread. It goes on for 7 weeks until they get all of the barley in. Then the wheat harvest begins in the third month at the time of Pentecost, and it goes on for a few more months. Then that runs into the time of gathering the summer fruits off of all of the grapevines and off of the fruit trees. And then once you've got all of that agricultural material harvested, that's when this celebration of Feast of Tabernacles happens. And you take your tithe up for an 8-day celebration of God's provision for the year. Verse 14, and this was the most happy of the three mandatory festivals. You shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, the widow who are within your towns. For 7 days you shall keep the feast to He who is your God at the place that he who is will choose, because he who is your God will bless you in all your produce, in all the work of your hands, so that you will be altogether joyful. Now, it only mentions the 7 days here, but we've seen other places. Feast of Tabernacles started on the 15th day of the seventh month. That first seven-day framework stopped at the 21st day of the seventh month, and then the 22nd day was another big day off. It was a closing ceremony, if you will, of rest and worship before everybody started heading home, starting on the 23rd. So verse 16, this is where Moses reviews what he just gave us. 3 times a year, all your males shall appear before he who is your God at the place that he will choose. So even though it's not mandatory for the women and underaged children, it was very common practice that the Jewish people would take the whole family to go to these three festivals. And the rule of thumb was basically this. Any adult male who was physically capable and was within the boundaries of the Promised Land was expected to go to either the tabernacle site or to the temple to worship on Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. So we're talking about a very highly mobile pilgrimage or group of pilgrims there in the Promised Land, moving back and forth between where they lived and where they had this group worship take place. And then we have the list again: Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Booths. They shall not appear before he who is empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of he who is your God that he has given you. Now, for the last one, Feast of Tabernacles, they brought their tithe, 10% of their increase during this last work year. The other ones, Passover and Pentecost, they brought what they could. Now, Passover had a requirement of the Passover lamb being brought along, but they could offer other things as well to make sure that Passover and Pentecost were just as happy festival times as the Feast of Tabernacles at the end of the year, or the end of, we should say, the end of the work year, the work cycle. As often happens in the book of Deuteronomy, we have a shift in focus here in the next verse. Verse 18, you shall appoint judges and officers in all your towns that he who is your God is giving you according to the tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous justice or judgment. Now the Levites and priests would be working at the tabernacle, we'll find out this later, on a schedule of some sort, as the priesthood and the Levitical numbers of Levitical workers increase. Not all of them are needed to do the work at the tabernacle or later at the temple all the time. And so they will develop what I like to refer to as a reserve program, where the majority are elsewhere in the country most of the year, working on their own farms, living with their own families, and serving the local tribal people. Because remember, the Levites are scattered throughout the 12 tribes' territories. So here, it's likely a lot of these judges are going to be local Levites, local priests who are well-versed in the Word of God, the law given by God through Moses. But some of the officers referenced here will likely be the local tribal officers. And they are tasked by God to be fair when they evaluate the cases that come up before them. We all understand and know that when people live together, they bump heads. They get at cross purposes. They have disagreements about property lines or interaction or sales or whatever it is. And so you have to have an arbitrator or several arbitrators to take care of this. That's the judicial system, as well as dealing with criminal acts that are going to pop up. And so the judges and the officers have to be appointed based on their commitment to doing things right. Verse 19, you shall not pervert justice. Justice has to be blind. The only thing that justice needs to pay attention to is what is the rule and what are the facts of the case. You shall not show partiality. That is, you don't look at the people, you look at the case law and the case facts. You shall not accept a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and subverts the cause of the righteous. If people can pay judges to render something in their favor, then that's not just. That is not fair. Justice, and only justice, you shall follow, that you may live and inherit the land that he who is your God is giving you. So that is the ideal that is supposed to take place. But the reality, as we will see in the history as we go through here, is just like that in other places of the world. Justice gets perverted by people of power and prestige. And we have to watch out for that, even in our own culture.